Okay, good morning, everyone. So let's go through 10 short ideas on the Haggadah. I know we haven't had much time to learn on our own, and our children, unfortunately, haven't had much time to learn in school in preparation for the Haggadah. So perhaps together, the few of us could learn together some ideas to share with the family, probably a limited family this year for the Seder, but some inspiring ideas that I came across this week to share with everyone. So again, I don't have the Maror Makomos to send to you right now. I'm working on the Zoom still as something new to me. But when I post the Shir in YU Torah, I hope to upload them onto the YU Torah Shir. So the first piece is a beautiful idea. The Torah writes that we know what we have on the Ka'ara, on the Seder plate, the Zroah. The Zroah is the arm, reminds us of the Karban Pesach. Now the question becomes, why was the Zroah, the part of the Karban Pesach, chosen to be placed in the Ka'ara? The Karban Pesach, the entire animal was roasted, the entire animal was eaten. So why dafka was the Zroah chosen? So the Torah writes, because to remind us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out with the Zroah Nutui. He stretched out his arm to save us, to take us out. So there's a beautiful idea that this is a reminder of what happened with Bas Paro. Now Bas Paro, Basya, she saw the Teva Moshe Benu, but Tishlach as Hamasa, she extended her hand to go reach out to Moshe. And the Gemara tells us in Sota that her hand became stretched out either 60 amos or 500 amos long. So now imagine this. Imagine standing 60 amos away or 500 amos away. What in the world was she thinking? Did she really think she could reach? Her hand is only 2 amos long. Did she think her hand could reach 50 amos, 500 amos, 60 amos to pick up Moshe Rabbeinu? It's impossible. If anybody were to watch what she's trying to do, try to catch a teva across the other side of the river, would think she's crazy. So what was she trying to accomplish by extending her hand? So the Kedusha Levi says an incredible idea. Bas Paro wanted to make herself feel clean. She wanted to know that she did everything in her capacity to say Moshe. That when she went to Bezdin Shamala and they asked her why she didn't say Moshe, she had an answer, I tried. I put my hand out and it was way too far, but I tried. And she did everything that was within her control to do something. And even though everyone, all her servants and her maidservants were looking at her, probably laughing at her for trying to even attempt to get a teva that was across the river, she did it anyways because she knew this was the right thing to do, just try. Even though she had no chance of getting it. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to show all the generations afterwards, says the Kedusha Levi, that every single person, every single Yid, who wants to come closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they'll be Zocha Tisyat Dishmai if they at least do a little bit of a shalas. Even though that shalas might look so far off and might be made fun of by everyone watching you, just put your hand out just a little bit. Show that you have a little bit of a ratzon, a little bit of a will to do something, even if it feels really distant. To accomplish something, to have a ratzon. So that's the lesson, says the Kedusha Levi, we learn from Basya, Bas Paro. And for that reason, on the Leil Seder, at the Kar, we choose Dafka the Zero, Dafka the hand, to remind us that a little bit of an effort, a little bit of a trying, a little ratzon, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could switch something from really far to make it really close. And Dafka, in a place like Mitzrayim, when we were so far away, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the ability to switch everything on its head, to take that which is Tumah, that which is Choshech, that which is dark, and just try a little bit, a small little effort, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to extend your hand. That's the message, a powerful message from the Zroah that's on the Seder plate. That's the first lesson. The second idea is from Rav Yashiv. Those who want to look for, by the way, a nice Haggadah, I was able to go to Z Berman the other day. They're officially locked, but they let me in, so I don't know what's going on with that. But either way, there's a beautiful sefer. It's backwards for you guys. It's called Dorish Tov. I don't know how to switch it around, Yaakov. You could send me a message. But Dorish Tov, it's a beautiful Haggadah with beautiful ideas. I got a lot of it from this particular Haggadah, those who want more. So the next idea is, all of us ask the question, that why do we lean? Why is there a mitzvah of Haseba, the night of the Seder? It's supposed to remind us of Derech Eretz, that we're free people. But we all know that none of us feel comfortable. We turn our chairs around, we lean, and we eat. There's nothing comfortable about that. And how is that an expression of Ben Chorin, when we lean in a way that's very, very uncomfortable. Perhaps in the times of the Gemara, that was how they ate, leaning on a couch. We don't know how to do that properly. We feel so disconnected. So how in the world is Haseba considered some form of expression of freedom? So Rav Yashu says, the whole night of the Seder, everything's supposed to be very, very organized, Kadesh, Urchas, and so on. That we were redeemed from Mitzrayim, we were redeemed to serve a Kadesh Baruch Hu. But we weren't redeemed to eat food. We weren't redeemed to eat matzah and dal kosos and mur. That wasn't the reason why we were redeemed. We were redeemed to serve Hashem. So therefore, even on a night like Leil Seder, where there's a level of eating involved, that Shulchan Aruch is so minimal. And most people barely spend any time on the Shulchan Aruch. We're busy spending time on the Magid. We're spending time asking questions, telling stories, manishanas. And there's so little emphasis on the Shulchan Aruch. It's part of the Seder, but it's small, it's quick, and most of us don't have any room in the stomach to eat after having all the matzah. It's so small in the overall picture of Leil Seder. Because the emphasis is supposed to be not the food. You know, I feel bad for all the mothers who cook so much and so much. In my house, I tell my wife, don't make even soup. Just make a little chicken and a little side dish and zehu. There's no need for courses. There's no time. There's no room for Shulchan Aruch. Have a little bit of food because the emphasis should be the ruchnis, not the gashmis. So in light of this, Rav Yashu says, there's a klal that we have as follows. That mi shemiskarev ledavar, a person who goes close to something, that shows what's chashuv to you. So if you're chasing after, you know, sports games and watching highlights, you're chasing after, that's what's close to you. And that which is not close to you, it chases after you. Again, mi shemiskarev ledavar, that which you go close to, that's a simon that the davar is chashuv lo, that's what you consider important to you. And if a person, im adam miskofe, if a person bends down to try to chase something, to eat from the food, that shows the food's chashuv to you. But when you lean back, you don't go for it, you bring the food to you, that shows that the food isn't chashuv to you. So dafka b'leil seder, we're trying to get the point across that it's about the ruchnis, not about the gashmis. We dafka lean away from the food, says Rav Yashiv. This shows we don't care. We're eating just because we're told to eat, but not something that we're looking after, not something that we are chasing after. And that's an incredible message from Rav Yashiv. So now part of the, you know, Magid that people don't really think about so much, unfortunately it's not the way the yeshivas have been trained, but it's, again, that's how the yeshivas are. We all try to ask good kashas and good answers. But one of the things we don't really focus on is part of the storyline, the midrashim. They're an incredible midrashim about what actually happened. That's really what Magid should be, not a kashin and answer, a lumdish thing. Those are all nice and fun. But really to understand what was the going on, what were the midrashim describing about the makas and, you know, Tzardeya, how Tzardeya wasn't only frogs jumping around, but the croaking was so painful to the ear. So it's a very nice midrash here about what happened, part of the behind the scenes of Mitzrayim. So the Gemara tells us Pisom Ramses were the two cities that were built by Bnei Israel while they were slaves. Now the Gemara says Machlokas, was it called Pisom or was it called Ramses? Perhaps it was really one city, but they were have different nicknames because the word Pisom also means that it was Pitahom. That whenever they built the pyramids, if it was pyramids or if it was the cities, it got absorbed in the ground. It was like quicksand. And Ramses means that the ground was very miserosis venophil, very soft. So Pisom Ramses means that they kept on building the cities and it crumbled. They built the city and it crumbled. So they quote from the Mari Brona, the following Shiloh. Imagine the following calculation. Bnei Israel were slaves for 220 years. And there were 600,000 men working day in and day out for 220 years. You would imagine over that time period, they could build more than simply two cities. All they accomplished was peace on Ramses in 220 years with 600,000 workers being slaved. So what the Yalkut Shimoni explains the following medrash. Now just picture the following. Rabbi Yochanan explains that B'shah Shetafas Yosef is Binyamin. When Yosef Atzadik grabbed onto Binyamin, and he said, whomever ha'isha she'nimtza gvia biyado, whoever holds on to that my silver goblet, he's going to be my slave. I'm going to get him. So Binyamin was grabbed on by Yosef. You're my captive. And immediately the Medrash says, Miyad Kos Yehuda. Yehuda was so angry. Vishog b'kol gadol. He roared out. Yehuda was like a lion. He let out this incredible roar. And it was so loud, the Medrash says. Halach kolo, the voice, the sound went out. Arba meos parsa, 400 parsa, ad sheshama chusha ben dan. Who's chusha ben dan? He was deaf. And yet so powerful was Yehuda's roar, his she'iga, that woke up, chusha ben dan heard it. So what did chusha ben dan do? Kafatz, he jumped. Uba meretz kanan, he ran from Eretz Kanan. He was back in Eretz Yisrael. Uba eto Yehuda, he joined force with Yehuda. Then they both start screaming together. You can't take Binyamin. And then the Medrash says, Bikshu Eretz Mitzrayim, the Mitzrayim wanted, Lahafochalem wanted to jump on them. And their voice got so loud, both Chushim ben Dan Yehuda, that two cities toppled over. Two great cities from their loud sound, Pison veRamses, crumbled because of the Kol God of Yehuda and Chushim ben Dan. And says the Medrash, for that reason, there was a gezerah on Klai Yisrael to rebuild these two cities. That's why it was only two cities, Pison veRamses, because they were the two that were destroyed by the Kol Gadol of Yehuda and Chushim ben Dan. Gives a little bit of a different perspective, a different angle of what took place there in Mitzrayim. There's a very nice Chsam Sofer. We're celebrating Shabbos Hagadol this week, and again, unfortunately, not together, but we will be celebrating Shabbos Hagadol. And the many, many explanations is why was it called Shabbos Hagadol, the Great Shabbos. So the Chsam Sofer explains the following idea. That it says in the Pasuk, Ish imo v'aviv tiro, that a man should fear his mother, she fear his father, v'shabbososai tishmor, and you should keep Shabbos, ani Hashem, I am Hashem. And the Pashup Shad of the Pasuk is, if you keep Shnei Shabbos, if you keep Shabbos, two Shabbos is in a row, so then we will bizocha to Ani Hashem, which means we'll bizocha to the Gula. Now there's going around a couple of Shabbos ago when Israel shut down, when they shut down the whole country, so this is the first time in the 70 years of the creation of the Medina that there were no Shabbos services or cabs going on Shabbos. So everyone kept Shabbos to a certain extent. So by us keeping Shabbos for two Shabbos is in a row, that's going to bring Ani Hashem bringing the Gula. That's Pashup Shat. But the Chsam Sofer says, based on the Medrash, the following beautiful idea. What it means is, Ish Imo Vaviv Tiro is referring to Aviv Imo, the father and mother of Esav. Esav was the Gadol, was the older brother. Between Esav and Yaakov, Esav was the Achia Gadol, the older brother. Both the father and the mother of Esav, namely Yitzchak and Rivka, the parents, called Esav a gadol, called him a great, the older child. It says that Vayikrael Esav b'no a gadol, that Yitzchak called his son Esav the older son, and Rivka also referred to him as the older son. It says Big Day Esav b'no ha gadol. So both the parents called Esav a gadol. Now that's scary. That Esav is the greater one. Hashem says, I called him Kata nisaticha begoyim. I called him a younger child, a kata. So says the Chazam Sofer. If you're going to call him based on the parents, ish imo v'aviv, the fact that the father's called him a gadol, tiro, you should be very, very fearful that he's a gadol based on what his parents called him. But according to what I say, ani Hashem, then he's a kata. And that's what it means. The Pasuk in Yeshayahu says there's going to be at the end of times a Tevach Gadol, a big Shechita of the Gadol, a Shechita of the Esav, who's the Bnei Gadol. If you keep Shabbos, two Shabbos is in a row, Shabbos a Gadol, says the Chassam Sofer, there's going to be a Tvicha Gadola, a great Shechting of Esav a Gadol, because Ani Hashem, I called him Katan Nisaticha Begoyim. I'm going to make him small. I'm going to minimize him. So the way to bring the Gula, Shabbos HaGadol, is a celebration of the Tevicha Gadola, the great Shechting of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but not based on what his parents called him Gadol, but based on HaKadosh Baruch Hu called him a Katan. And when he's a Katan, that means it's going to be a great Shechita. That's a pshat in Shabbos HaGadol. There's a very nice idea brought down in Shulchan Aruch that the night of Leil Seder, we should take out the most beautiful china and silver that we have. And there's a strange comment that the Magen Avraham says the Maharil would also take out all the different properties, the kelim that he had from the goyim. That he would lend that money, and they give a collateral, a mashkon, to hold on to as a security to collect his money back. So the Maharil would take all the kelim of the Akum and put them on the Seder, on the table. So now, it's a very strange thing that you would do this, because we know that, firstly, that the kelim that were used by goyim, there's treif in there, there's blius of treif there. To put the treif out on the Seder is a very strange thing. And even that which is not used by the kelim, even if they're brand new, we know, if you buy a keli from a non-Jew, you have to put it in the mikvah. Because the Chassam Sofer explains that their very thought, their very ownership of a utensil, a vessel, that infuses it with tumah. So it's an incredible sakana to utilize such kelim. So why in the world would the Maharil take out all these kelim that are filthy, whether there's treif in there, or whether simply there's tumah because they own it? Why would that be presented on the table, Leil Seder, Pesach night? So I don't know who this is from, but that's that Haggadah I share with you. This is an idea, just a very nice message from Reb Aaron Toisig. I don't know who it is. It's a likud of a number of different Rabbanim. But he says to tell us the following thing. That from the koach of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, the power of describing the story of being redeemed from Mitzrayim, and the tokef of Kedusha Laila, and the magnitude of the Kedusha that's present the night of Seder, that has the ability to be pokeas hatuma me'akli. It's able to remove the tuma that's in the kli. So it's trying to show us that how powerful is the night, even that's all year round, that's tame, that's treif, that's full of the filth of whoever put the filth in from the machshava, from the owning of it, Leil Seder has the ability to mitaher, to purify any single person, kelim, people who are present at the Seder. That's the koach of the Leil Seder. Now, along these lines is a separate idea, but a very short idea from Rabbi Melech Biederman. He says something very similar. He says the following idea. There's an idea in the Medrash when it comes to Sukkos that the Dal and Minim each represent a different type of Yid, a different type of person. And the Esrog, which both has smell and taste, represents a tzaddik who has the full package. There's tam, and there's reyach. And then you have the lulav, which only has tam, only has taste, but no smell. And you have the dasim, which has smell, but doesn't have taste. It only has one of the elements. That represents the beinonim. And then you have the aravos, which neither have smell nor taste, which represents the rush. And every single day of Sukkot, we take all four minim together. Even the aravos, which represents the rasha, because when they're in tandem, when they're all biyachad, then all of them have a certain place. The chavivas of the achdus is a beautiful thing. But on Hoshana Rabbah, where we only take the arava, we take the arava all by itself, what do we do with it? We smash it on the ground. There's a chavata, we beat it on the ground to tell us, when the rasha, you try to stand alone. You try to separate from the tzaddikim, then it's you don't have the ability to do so. It leads to a chavata. It leads to a beating. It leads to a terrible thing. You have to be together. It leads to a af ata hake eshina. We say to the Rasha, Leil Seder, we knock at his teeth. If you try to stand by yourself and remove yourself from the klal, the fisha hotzi es atom min a klal, kafir be'ikr. Then we're going to knock at your teeth. We're going to beat you. But so long as you stay be'achdus, you stay together with everyone else, then you're in good company. So says Rabbi Biederman, he points out, the gematria of Rochatz, one of the simanim of the Leil Seder, is the same gematria as Tzibur, 298. When a person is part of the Tzibur, that itself serves as a rechitza. It serves as a way to cleanse, to bathe, to clean, even those who are like aravos, even those who are like Rishoyim. In a similar vein, the word Vayakel has the same gematria as a mikvah, 151, that when you're Vayakel, when you're as a kehila, when you're together, it's able to purify even the people who are furthest away. So as the Ma'aril said, take out the kalim of the goyim, it could even cleanse the tumah from the goyim. Rabbi Yirmiyahu says it could clean even the Rishayim from all the Averis. And we have to keep that in mind. Leil Seder is not simply about going through the motions. It's about feeling impacted and going through a process of tshuva, of connecting to each other and connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, next idea. I'm not sure what number we're up to yet. I think number 5 or 6. Another Chsam Sofer. The Chsam Sofer points out, based on one of the questions of the Manish Tana, how come every night of the year, B'chol HaLeilos Anu Ochlin Chametz Matzah, we have Chametz Matzah, we have both of them together, and tonight we only have Matzah. And the Bar Barnel explains that this was really a question about Lachmei Toda, the carbon Toda that one would bring after showing a Karsa Tov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for saving him from whatever disaster may have been, flying over the desert or over the sea, becoming healed from something. There's a carbon toda. And the carbon toda has 40 loaves of bread. Some of them were chametz, and some of them were matzah. So the question the Bar Barnel says is, why all year round when we bring a carbon toda, we bring a full 40 loaves of bread, some chametz and matzah, we have both them together. Bilel Pesach, whereby there's also, the carbon Pesach is a type of carbon toda. To thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for taking us out. Why is there only matzah here? Why is there no chametz? What's different about this carbon toda than the rest of the year? Where's the chametz Leil Seder? That was the question according to the Bar Barnel's understanding. So the Chasam Sofer explained as follows. We begin the Seder night, the Haggadah, talking about Maschil Begunus. We're talking about our past. Avadim Hayinu. We were coming from place of Avodah Zarah. So listen to the following mashal that the Chasam Sofer explains to get this idea across. You have something that gets dirty. There's a stain. So you want to get it clean. You give it to the launderer, you give it to the laundromat, and what do? They pour some other like blue stuff on it, and they get it even dirtier. And then, afterwards, it's able to clean everything together. So when you pay the koveis, you pay the launderer, you're not paying him for cleaning out the blue detergent that he got dirty. You're only paying him for cleaning out the stain that you, the ketchup stain you put in. But the additional dirt you didn't do. Now the additional detergent that he put in to make it dirtier, that was part of the process. You needed to do that. The kovis needed to do that. But you don't pay for that. That's part of the process of cleaning. Says the Chasam Sofer, we came from a history of Ovd Avodah Zarah. We came from our ancestors of Terach and Nachor and Besuel and Lavan, people of great rishus. And that's our responsibility. We need to cleanse ourselves because that's the yichus. But going down to Mitzrayim, we didn't ask for that. We didn't deserve that. That was part of the process of putting in the detergent, making it dirty, to be part of the cleansing process. So that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put us through the washing machine and the dryer, we don't have to pay for that. That wasn't our responsibility. That was HaKadosh Baruch Hu being the koveis, having to get us dirtier so that we get cleansed even more. So says the Chasam Sofer, when it comes to Karim Pesach, we're not paying for the chametz. We're not paying for the gullus. We didn't deserve that gullus. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's putting us in the gullus, putting us in the washing machine to get us out cleaner. We only have to pay for what was Ovd Avodah Zarah. And therefore, says the Chasam Sofer, this is a Karim Pesach that we're only celebrating the matzah, the redemption of Mitzrayim. But we're not celebrating the gullus Mitzrayim, because that wasn't something we asked for, it wasn't something that we deserved. And for that reason, it's a Karim Pesach which only has the matzah. We're only describing the geula. We're not talking about the gullus. That's the beautiful idea of the Chasam Sofer. Very short, 30-second idea. I mentioned the other night in a shiur I gave. But it's a powerful point. I think it really it rings home. It's very relevant to all of us now when we're stuck in our house for the most part, where we feel very contained and claustrophobic to a certain extent. So in Hallel, I feel the Hallel doesn't get enough attention at the Seder. It certainly gets a lot of singing, hopefully. But everyone by that time is very drained of asking questions and talking about it. But this is a very, very important idea. And Hallel is a very important piece of the Seder. So one of the psukim we say in Hallel is Mina meitar karasika anani vamerchavya. Mina meitar, from the depths, from the tightness. Meitar means like beinam etzarim, squeezed between different lines. From a very closed off place, we're calling out to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Anani vamerchavya. He answers us b'merchav, with great, great magnitude. So the Rokeach says as follows. We have to realize that sometimes we're calling out to Kadosh Baruch Hu from a place that's meitzar, a place that's tight, that's very contained. We're stuck in our house. But we have to remember, even though we might feel in such a way, it's not the reality. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when He responds to us, He responds to us b'merchav, with things that are wide and things that were great. Because kol ma da'avad rachmana, everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does, letab avad, He does it for the best. And therefore, He doesn't write it here in His Haggadah, but He writes in a different Sefer, Rabbi Yirmiyahu, that the gematria of merchav is the same exact gematria as ner, which is 250, to tell us that even when we're in a place of darkness, a place where we feel stuck, we feel tight and claustrophobic, a ner, a candle is able to light us up. It's able to be a merchav, to bring about beautiful, beautiful response. I think we have two more pieces left together. One of the ideas that the Medrash tells us, the Gemara Sanhedrin tells us, that the Malachim wanted to sing a Shira when they saw the Mitzrayim drowning in the Yam Suf. And Amar Lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Ma'isa Yadai, my creations, Tovim Bayam, are drowning. V'atem Omer Mishira, and you're attempting to sing a song. It's completely inappropriate to sing a song. So there are two questions you could ask here. The more of a Shemus asks two questions, it gives a completely different shot to what's going on here. Number one, Mipnei ma amru, Mipnei ma lo rata Kadosh Baruch Hu, Shiamru malachim shira. Why didn't He want them to say a shira of them with their destruction? We have a mefurish pasuk that tells us in Mishle, Be'oved Rishaim Rina. With the destruction of Rishaim, there should be Rina, there should be singing. So what was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's taina on the malachim? We should celebrate in their downfall. In particular, when the Rishon were Mitzrayim, who put us, who enslaved us for so many years, why wouldn't you sing a song? That's a question everyone asks. The second question, which I don't think I've seen elsewhere, is the word Tovim Bayam is incorrect grammatically. Tovim Bayam means that you're causing them to drown. You're being Toveya them. There really should be Mais Yodai Nitbomayam, that they're drowning. No one caused, no one threw them in. They were drowning. It was passive. It should be Mais Yodai Nitbomayam. They were being drowned. They were drowning on their own. But no one was Tovim Bayam. No one was sticking them in the water. So what's the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says Tovim Bayam, that someone was actively drowning them? So it says the Morvei Shemesh, again, a completely different shot to what's going on here. He quotes from Shmuel Minicholsburg the following. The Malachi Asharis wanted to sing a song not to celebrate their destruction, but rather based on the Gemara Sanhedrin. They wanted to sing a song that was so sweet, a song of Ne'imas Kolam, a sweet sound, and through that, Tete Nishmasam, let them depart the world through a Shira. Let them melt in the beautiful singing of the Malachim. And we have such a concept. The soldiers of Sancheirav died in such a way, based on the Gemara Sanhedrin Daf Tzadi Hei Mebeiz, that when the Malachim, the Chayos HaKodesh, sang, the Chayalim just left the world from the beauty of the singing. So the Malachim said, I don't want them to die by dry. I want them to die by singing a song to them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, I don't want them to die with the sweet sound of Malachim. I want a Tovim Bayam. I want them to drown. I want to suffocate them in the water. Why, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu? As a punishment for what they did to my children. What did they do to my children? They threw my children into the river to kill the boys. As a Mida Keneged Mida, I don't want them dying through the Shira. I want them dying Mida Keneged Mida, Tovim Bayam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm not letting you sing. I'm going to stuff them under the water as a Mida Keneged Mida. Perhaps not so inspiring, but certainly a different outlook of what was going on, that the Malachim weren't singing to celebrate, but they were attempting to sing to destroy and to kill them with the sweet voices of the Malachim. Let's finish with one last idea. It's a cute little story. That we know Chazal tell us that when Klal Yisrael was standing at the Yam Suf, the Shvatim were busy fighting with each other, the Gemara tells us. This one says, I'll go first. This one says, I'll go first. The fighting, who's going to jump in first? And Kofetz Nachshon ben Aminadav v'yored le'yam t'chila. And Nachshon ben Aminadav jumped in first and he split the Yam Suf. And so there's a Maisa once, Chol HaMoed Pesach, a certain Avreich, a young guy walked into a shul between Mincha Marv, and the Gabayim immediately recognized that he was a Talmid Chacham, and they said, can you give us a little drasha, a little 5 minute something between Mincha Marv? And the Avreich said, no, I'm not a man of words. Lav ish dvar manochi, I don't speak much, no thank you. And the Gabayim pushed him, and they didn't get let up. Finally, they convinced him to say a few words between Mincha Marv. So he had no choice, he got up there, he stood on the bima, and began to darsh. He says, Rabbosai, in just a couple days from today, we're going to be celebrating Shvi'i Shel Pesach. And we're going to be reading from the Sefer Torah, Kriyas Yam Suf Az Yashir. And let's a little bit understand about what was going on at Kriyas Yam Suf. Kulam Vada Yodim, everybody knows the circumstances that Klal Yisrael were in at that moment. There are hundreds of thousands of Yidden who had their wives and their young children not knowing where to go. They were standing in front of a Yam Suf. And behind them there were millions of Mitzrayim and chariots chasing after them. And in front of them is a Yam Suf. And no one knew what to do. There's no way out. What happened in that moment? You needed a Mesias Nefesh of a Yid to cause the Yam Suf to split. And without the Mesias Nefesh, nothing would happen. There was a Yid that was there. You know what his name was? The great, great Gershon ben Aminadav. Gershon ben Aminadav. So the Kila started whispering amongst themselves, Nachshon, Nachshon, not Gershon, Nachshon. But the Avreich ignored the whispers. He continued to describe Gershon ben Aminadav. And Gershon ben Aminadav was standing there, what to do? I have the Yam Suf in front of me. I have the Mitzrayim behind me. I've got my wife, my children. I need to do something. I have a responsibility to my family. What should I do? And the Gershon ben Aminadav decided to be Moser Nefesh. And he didn't ask advice and he decided to jump in. And suddenly, everyone started going to the Gabbai while he's telling the Drasha, who is this guy? He told you he's not an Ish Anochi. He keeps saying Gershon ben Aminadav. The guy doesn't even know the guy's name is Nachshon ben Aminadav. But the Avreich ignored all the whispers, all the screams, he continued to go. And it was so clear to Gershon ben Aminadav that without Mesiras Nefesh, nothing would happen. Nothing would move. There'd be no Kriyas Yam Suf. And so Gershon decided, I'm going to jump into the water. And when he jumped in, you know what happened? He met another guy whose name was Nachshon ben Aminadav, who already jumped in before him. If Nachshon hadn't jumped in beforehand, Gershon would have been the great tzaddik. He would have been the great hero. So the lesson the Avreich was saying, when you have an opportunity, don't waste any time. You don't want to be the Gershon. You want to be the Nachshon ben Aminadav. And there's so many great opportunities. I have to say, you know, Baruch Hashem, many people are on right now listening. We have an incredible chesed committee right now. Had I not been on, I would not know what goes on. We have people who are organizing this committee. People are going shopping for others who are in quarantine, others who are sick, others who are weak. I am amazed by who and how many times people are jumping to the opportunity to get these chasadim done. So we have opportunities in the kermatov, we have opportunities in life. We have to take advantage of these opportunities. Don't be the Gershon ben Aminadav, be the Nachshon ben Aminadav. Everyone should have a wonderful day and a great week, and a Chag Kasher v'Sameach.